listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. I'm happy to be back with you, and I appreciate having you guys joining in, and want to thank Michael Ostendorf, attorney, that set in for me last week, and I enjoyed listening to the show myself. Quite informative and depressing at the same time. And in the future, if you have some problems or want to go further in details on the Child Protective Services or whatever the thing is, the agency, please don't hesitate to call and let's try and expose, because it is painful. And I've actually had first-hand experience with relatives, sisters, who've had problems with child support and collecting, and guy living just over in the next state line wouldn't be collected from. So it brings on a hardship, and our government agencies should be more attentive and diligent. But anyway, I was away for a bit and had some good experiences. And so, but today I have Summer Nimeth with me, who was with Leviah Action Network, and we've talked before on Cayena Point and some of the issues, and there was a predator fence out there that was being proposed at Cayena Point, and there are some cultural concerns as well with this present ongoing project. Once again, it's a product of the Laura Phelan era, where she's gathered a great army of, quote, environmentalists who, for whatever reasons, money, apparently, because they're not showing the sensitivity that they should, and they're anything and everything they join in, and there's this little clique with the environmental community. They go out and they define a problem, then they come back and want to work the problem, and they want to make money on it, and they bring in their friends by justifying a need for this and that. And Cayena Point is a very fragile area. There's a bird population out there. It has been managed. But that is the purpose of the DLNR anyway, the NARS. It's a Natural Areas Reserve, the Cayena Point. So what's troubling here, as we've spoken before in the past, is how things have gotten done out there. And contractors and biologists now coming back as contractors, and their husband or their spouse being involved in the actual making of money by installing the predator fence. So we're going to talk about all of that. And Summer, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Carol. Thanks again for having me. It's a pleasure to be back.
Yeah. Well, again, I invited you back because I know what you were up against. There's been a gathering of troops and all the loyal people that have supposedly, some sensitive people in the community of Native Hawaiians who've embraced Laura Phelan. And when Laura wants something, Laura gets it.
Absolutely. I've learned that lesson the hard way.
What bring us up to date. What is going on with this for right now?
Okay, well, as of November 10th, the bulldozer and excavator rolled in the darkness into Kaena, and they started constructing that same Friday, and continued on into the weekend without some of the protections in place that they had required of themselves in their own memorandum of agreement, and those protections were for cultural sites, but also they had stipulated in their environmental assessment that they would not be doing construction during this time because it's the nesting season of the moly or the Laysan albatross.
Well, the what we now know that Laura Phelan is departing soon from DLNR. We're going to be, in the next hour, I'm going to be discussing some of that. But the concern is that we have the shearwater. And the fence there, there's money to be made. Friends and acquaintances. Acquaintances came in from New Zealand and sold this idea. This fence was planned somewhere else.
Yes.
it wasn't planned for Kaina Point.
No, it wasn't.
But they didn't want to lose the money, so they drummed up. And I'm all for protecting the birds. I mean, I will break legs to protect the birds. I don't want anybody to get any misunderstanding of what I stand for and what I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like people within government manipulating and creating a hui of such and then declare that it's science and it's in the best interest of the animals when, is it $1 million?
I think it's, I think it's about 250,000.
So I thought it, originally there was a bigger project. And so they decided to install it, but they didn't want to lose the money. That's the bottom line.
Right.
So then define an area. So when you had some of the local community people, they got involved and said, yeah, amen, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
While the science has been, what?
Well,
whose science is
been,
it?
Well, the science is connected to the biologist who has been contracted by DLNR. She's done some research on the birds, actually, and it's interesting because her own research shows that there has been an increase in the Laysan albatross population, you know, despite the fact that they're always pleading to the media that, you know, that the bird population is in decline and they're threatened by rodents and other predators. It seems like, you know, it's slippery science, and if you don't look at both sides of the issue, you're not going to see that.
Yeah, the birds, from when I arrived here, the birds have increased, I would say substantially. Some of the problems is that if they really, really were concerned with the bird, the protection of the birds, they would control the people that go out there. The problems that have really been troubling or problematic has been dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And also, they're not disclosing this openly, but a greater problem is people stepping on the nest because the shearwater, wedgetail, and other are underground nesters,
right,
or borer.
Mm-hmm.
And they leave their babies there or their eggs. And so when a human comes along and strays off the, quote, trail, which is pretty loosely operated anyway, they step in it, cave in the cave of the nest,
right,
and you starve the bird because the parents or the chick dies or the eggs get smashed.
Mm-hmm.
If they really wanted to protect, I think just limiting the area and being more specific. Now, they hired a person out there to oversee, but does he have any police authority? Does it really work?
He doesn't have any police authority. He's not able to give any citations. He's actually an interpretive ranger. So pretty much he's just telling the story of the area. He's a great guy, but he doesn't have any powers to do, you know, protection out there.
And if you were to try and get in touch with the law enforcement person, these are the bigger problems. They say the mice, but and the rats and whatever, and the mongoose. But there's been an aggressive trapping program with the wildlife services.
Absolutely, for years now.
Now, will they continue to hire the wildlife service to?
There will be. They will continue adding rodenticides and using traps because the fence is not operating as it was designed to do, which was completely enclose an area and seal it off. So you would seal the area off, you get rid of all of the predators, and then you have this, you know, this happy Eden for the birds. But that's not the case here. The fence is not completely enclosed, so there's access points for predators to move around. So they're going to have to continue trapping and baiting.
So this is a $250,000 golden parachute for someone that created science. And if it were to work, I mean, again, I'm all for protecting, taking all measures.
Right.
But when you introduce that people element, and I know now how, just this one fact, and I keep speaking to it, it was never, the funding was never meant to go to Kaina Point. Never, ever, ever. They couldn't meet the deadlines and the criteria for the original siting of this fence.
Mm.
So they decide, well, let's find somewhere. Why not Kaina Point? And that's unfortunate on the part of the environmental community to buy into that, because if it's needed, put it in place.
Right.
Without the jigamaboo or whatever, you got to jiggle things and juggle things to make things look good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, another issue that somebody had brought up, somebody who somebody who's been looking into the science of things is that, you know, we are, during El Nino years, the bait fish with which the seabirds feed on are actually almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Lindsay Young's research does not consider is that, you know, maybe the fledglings aren't there, and maybe the birds aren't nesting because there's not enough food source for them to actually,
mm-hmm.
you know, increase the population. I mean, there is that entire ecosystem that we should be looking at
mm-hmm.
as scientists, and not just, you know, looking at one species and saying, oh, it must be the cats or it must be the rats that are causing this population decline.
Mm-hmm. And what's the study are you saying?
Okay, so that was a study by... Well, of course, by Lindsay Young, that was done in 2009, and also a study by Smithers and Devney, Smithers in 2003 and Devney in 2009, and it's looking at the reproductive success of tropical seabirds during El Nino years.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I do know that in the old days, when the efforts were, I used to go out there with the state people
mm-hmm.
to actually cut back the keavi and use the cuttings to obstruct the path of the human beings that would go out there.
Mm.
And at that time, there was absolutely no control. It was willy-nilly free. You just walk out there and do what you want to do
mm-hmm.
and cave in and step on the burrows and what have you. Then they came up with this idea of putting a cable strand of metal wire
mm-hmm.
around to contain the people. Well, I have a concern with that, and I don't have any documented proof of this, but here's what I do know, that the albatross come in, and sometimes due to heavy winds, they're gliding in. They
mm-hmm.
come in, and what's going to happen if they hit that cable?
Right.
Well,
Or the fence. Yeah.
Well, you know, again, I don't know if it's thought out. One can argue, well, these are scientists, and then I can argue, well, these are the same school of the science
mm-hmm.
that brought in mongoose,
right?
You know, to eat the rats, and
mm-hmm.
people know that story. It's not working,
right?
And on and on and on. So I don't, just because someone is a scientist, I'm not trusting that. But the bigger concern is that how these two agencies wedded themselves to come up with this.
Mm-hmm.
And we need, I personally believe that the NARS area should be expanded. I would like to see the motorcycles and the dune buggies and the off-road be contained and
mm-hmm.
controlled out there. That's
yeah.
that's my belief. But do it on the up and up. Don't go and recruit local people. Get involved with them. And then isn't William Isla on the
he's been an avid supporter of the project.
Okay.
Yeah, throughout.
And then I guess they would say, okay, well, look, we have William Isla. He says okay.
Mm-hmm.
But again, does it meet the smell test? You see, Isla is a state employee.
He is a state employee
working for Laura Thielen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to question his integrity, but the whole thing reeks when you start to look at it, and I'll
mm-hmm.
say that publicly and openly, and that's not criticizing William Isla, speaking to his character,
mm-hmm.
but it's just to say this is an example of how the Laura Thielen train has managed to traverse itself and gather up whatever it wanted, whether it's boating,
mm-hmm.
the boating community has a problem with this management,
mm-hmm.
Pick a few people in and install whatever program she wants and walk away. So this fence, how tall is it again? How long? You got any specs on it?
I don't have the specs with me now, but it does stretch from the high tide mark on the Mokulei'a side near the rock wall barrier to the Keawe'ula side
mm-hmm.
High tide mark.
Mm-hmm.
So it does go around the actual point.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it doesn't enclose the point. And it will completely obliterate the view planes from the point to the west side and
mm-hmm.
to, you know, to the north shore too.
So now, can you explain, I don't know if you're able to, the cultural significance of this particular site? Could you speak
sure.
to that?
Well, this is Kalaiokaena we're talking about. This is the place where our ancestors leap into or travel into the next world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very significant culturally. And it's also a place where burials have been discovered through the years, the sand dunes in particular, and also up Malka, there have been known burials as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a very culturally sensitive area. And unfortunately, too, before this project began, I believe, according to somebody from the Oahu Island Burial Council, she was digging through the records and she found that, what is her name from Shifty? There's been a big question around Nancy McMahon.
McMahon
had pretty much rubber stamped the project after just having 2 days of surveying out there. And it's unfortunate because there's so many sites out there that still have yet to be documented, never
mm-hmm.
been documented before.
Mm-hmm.
So they really don't understand, you know, the significance of the area if they haven't done a thorough cultural survey.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, just really, they've acted in a very culturally insensitive way
mm-hmm.
throughout this whole process. And it's unfortunate because, you know, there have been several Hawaiians who have come up against the project. And, you know, we've gone through the process and said, hey, you know, we're going to file a contested case. If you're not going to listen to us, okay, well, we're going to file appeal in First Circuit Court. You know, I'm going to file a TRO against this project
mm-hmm.
because I don't like what's going on, and I'm not getting the opportunity to say, hey, you know, let's look at this science closely. Let's look at the impacts on the cultural sites closely.
Well, the science is being generated by the scientists, and the scientists have an interest in it, and
mm-hmm.
they have connection, and they're going to stand to make a, quote, profit as a personal individuals
right.
from this program. So are we looking at science, or are we looking at the bottom line, profit?
It's clearly profit.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they were concerned about science and the birds, you know, they would have followed their EA and not started constructing when the albatross are coming back to nest.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that for me, that clearly shows that, you know, the birds aren't their concern.
Well, I have some, an intimate relationship with China Point, and in the old days, when as a special agent here working out there, I recall, and this is what troubles me about this whole process, and I believe that it's insensitive. On an occasion, I was driving out doing some work out there, and there were motorcycles, and I noticed there was a skull lying that had been removed or disturbed from the dunes. I tried for 3 days to get someone to be interested in that project, and ultimately it ended up in the hands of the state park, not Shifty, not anyone.
Wow.
To this day, don't know what happened to that.
It's really, yeah, that's happened on several occasions out there, and that's another reason why, you know, the Burial Council representative from Wailua, she's really concerned that they've created this culvert to divert water flow from the fence area, and they have not, at this point, had a hydrologist go out there to look at where the water would be flowing, and her concern too would be that, you know, that it could disturb or displace cultural sites underground or above ground too. So it's really a scary thing to think about, that, you know, this process has been speeding along, and there's no stopping it.
Now I noticed that the OHA,
mm-hmm.
you had sent out a letter of appeal to
yeah.
OHA. How's it going?
Okay, well, OHA actually was, I almost want to say that they were forced into signing the Memorandum of Agreement. They were told by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife that if they did not sign by a certain date, that they would be removed as a required signatory from this Memorandum of Agreement. And interestingly enough, as soon as they signed it, you know, the bulldozers were in the same week. So, you know, clearly the project was, they were planning to be out there at this time, and whether or not OHA had signed that Memorandum of Agreement. But because they did, OHA has the power to question anything that's going on out there. And so I've appealed to OHA to, you know, to please look closely at the MOA and pay attention to the fact that, you know, they're not following their own Memorandum of Agreement out there.
Now, as best we can, the Fish and Wildlife Service, the federal agency, the
yes.
United States Fish and Wildlife Service,
yes.
the Department of the Interior,
mm-hmm.
this land is a state land.
Yeah.
The Department of Land and Natural Resources has authority over it, and it's a NARS, Natural Area Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
How did the Fish and Wildlife Service get involved? I thought Lindsay was contracting with the state.
They are contracting with the state, and
to
so
do
it
the
was
study
through
the birds.
The Wildlife Society, I think it is, actually applied for a grant with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, but the money is coming from U.S. Fish and Wildlife, so they have, you know, they have a key role.
So this speaks to this, and most people don't understand that these relationships that exist here in this town, mm-hmm. what is considered to be science, and I'd like to really bring this out, not just this situation, Palmyra, how it was acquired, and Nature Conservancy's involvement in many of things, and how now that you have a scientist who's doing a contractual study of the birds that's managed by the state, mm-hmm. at the National Natural Areas Reserve,
mm-hmm.
DLNR. Clearly the United States Fish and Wildlife Service has an interest in managing migratory birds,
mm-hmm.
which is albatross and shearwater.
Right.
But it is not clear is that where was this money? Did this project even go out to bid?
Mm.
Who came to town with this fence to put it in one area? Someone saw it. Oh, well, we can't lose the money. Did it go out for a bid?
You know, I'm questioning that because from what I understand, that excluder fence is actually, I mean, the only fence like that is the one that was created by Excluder in New Zealand, Excluder Company.
Mm-hmm. And they were here, set it up, going to make it, and couldn't get the Fish and Wildlife, my understanding, that mm-hmm. the Fish and Wildlife couldn't meet its original agreement and or whatever the deadline was on building it somewhere else. So, hey, there's a pot of money here.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of, and everybody involved, they're good people, but good people can also be swayed by good money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's science. How long is this fence going to last? Are they saying?
Okay, well they're saying. I think they're saying. Oh, absolutely not permanent. I think they quoted 15 to 20 years. However, I've heard other staff in the department make public presentations saying maybe 10 to 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I even question that because of the harsh conditions out at Ka'ena. I mean, you've got the salt that's blowing in from the trade winds, from the high surf and stuff like that. I mean, clearly there's going to be some oxidation going on, and you know, I've seen metal that goes out there. You look at some of the stakes that were put out just a year ago, and they have just turned to rust. I mean, mm-hmm. Things out there don't last because mm-hmm. of the conditions.
Well, I don't understand how and why. There are many other issues that this money could have been done at,
mm-hmm.
Used to do. And I'm not sitting here agreeing with you. It's just that there are so many other things. If you really wanted to manage it, reduce the number of people.
Right.
The behavior that I've observed in people, they can take their bicycles out there. They can take their dogs to the main fence.
Mm-hmm. Well, if there's nobody in there, they're taking their dogs in,
yeah.
there, too.
Mm-hmm. And how many birds on occasion, large numbers have been killed by birds, by dogs.
By dogs.
And, you know, the predation on rats,
mm-hmm.
and what have you, by rats and all, I don't believe they're going to be able to rat-proof that area.
Absolutely not.
And mongoose-proof.
No.
And this is just going to come from the mountain, go down to the ocean, right? It's not going to surround.
Well,
the
it's going from high tide mark to high tide mark. So it's actually, I mean, so of course during low tide, every predator,
mm-hmm.
you know, could make their way into the reserve, especially if they know where their food source is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish people, I have pictures and I might post up if I get the time to, and see that the people that are invited out there, a lot of hikers,
mm-hmm.
and the management, some of that money should have been put into greater closure areas, greater managing of the area.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, take that grant from Fish and Wildlife Service to you if they're giving away money. But let it be open, an open bid process. Was that the best method? Is that the best, is there a better fence?
That's a great idea, Carol. Is the fence really a solution? Do we need to have a fence out there, mm-hmm. or are there other solutions? And mm-hmm. I think that they would have, if they actually did an EIS for the project, I think that maybe they would have, they would have been forced to look at different options to mm-hmm. protect the birds. And, I question this because they're getting federal funding, the feds are, supposed to fall under NEPA, mm-hmm. the NEPA law, which requires an EIS if there are going to be, if there are going to be impacts to mm-hmm. an area, either cultural impacts or, impacts to the environment. And, they actually applied for an exemption mm-hmm. for this particular project, which blows my mind. And what they said in that exemption is that, there is no, there would be no cultural impacts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's during their application process to exempt themselves from NEPA.
Yeah. I'm at a loss because I guess I can describe it as, it's called Club Fed.
Mm-hmm.
And the general public is not aware. They hear projects going, no one really scrutinizes them. And what it is, it's a clique in this town that individuals can come to town, whoever you are, as long as you're buddy-buddy with Fish and Wildlife and buddy-buddy with DLNR and buddy-buddy with the SHPTI, you get what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will sit on and squander, they being DLNR, they couldn't manage their way out of a rainstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And they've proven that. And some of the poor choices that we see daily.
Yeah.
But they invoke Big Brother syndrome. Big Brother has money. Big Brother is willing. Well, within Big Brother, like the Fish and Wildlife Service, there's a clique there. There is an elitist bunch of people that is managing the state resources. They may be on the federal level,
mm-hmm.
but it's still nothing to do with just good, sound management. I know firsthand. And so you find these relationships where they wed themselves with DLNR. You were to ask for documents, you're an individual citizen. You're treated as if you are not privy or have a right to it.
Mm-hmm.
So this clique that the general public is not aware of, and so when you see, oh, the Fish and Wildlife Service is involved, we don't know the dirt that is in the closed doors, the clear and unobstructed access that they give to Nature Conservancy,
mm-hmm.
that they give to Environment Hawaii, and they buddied up. And Laura Thielen is happy. Paul Conroy, that's a whole big clique of people, elitists, who claim that they are managing the resources, but they manage it with the help. And I invite them on the show, but they won't come on the show because I don't speak the right science with them, mm-hmm. because I ask the questions, how do we get a fence that was supposed to be built somewhere else? And the time ran out. You could meet that deadline and all the criteria that was necessary. So all of a sudden, you superimpose it and planted that kind of point. How do you get to that point?
Yeah.
And how do you take a contractor who was there studying the birds on behalf of the state, who now is going to benefit financially with her spouse to on the fence? How do we get to that part of it? And some people say that's a mean-spirited thing to say, but good science is science.
Yeah.
Good scientists introducing special interests and personal interests is not good science.
Absolutely not. Yeah, the backdoor dealings that have been going on, that's kind of a signal that maybe we need to question the science,
yeah.
too.
And I'm sure there are people out there would be happy in the Native community that mm-hmm. would be happy to work hand-in-hand in managing the mice or the rats or mm-hmm. doing some kind of work. Did they explore that? Did they introduce that?
That was something that I actually suggested, and from what I understand, they didn't have to, because they didn't have to do an EIS.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to look at different options for mm-hmm. Protection of the birds out there.
It's state land,
mm-hmm.
it's state action, and it's federal money.
Yeah.
But no EIS.
Right.
And they gave an exemption?
They granted an exemption
based
on the fact that there was going to be no impact to cultural sites.
Right. And yet, if you were to disturb the cultural site, being able to stand afar and view it,
would have a visual impact.
Oh, absolutely. There would be several sites that will be separated from the because of the fence.
Well, it sounds like a disregard and insensitivity to native culture.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if you don't have a church that you can go to and pray, it's not culture.
No.
If you can't worship and give homage, pay homage to your spiritual world, it's not of importance.
Right.
I don't know, but I look at you and I see that you've been working at this and they've dismissed you.
Completely. I've tried every avenue. I mean, I just was in the courts last week and mm-hmm. I made the mistake of calling them out on NEPA, and which is a federal law and not a state law, so I should have filed in federal court. And then they tell me that an individual cannot argue the NEPA law in
mm-hmm.
federal court. So,
right.
I mean, you're pretty much screwed. I mean, how is the public supposed to interact with a government that's shutting you down? You can't.
Yeah, it's the government that wants it. It's the government's money. The
mm-hmm.
government's sponsoring it. And yet, you can't file because they already want it.
So, right.
And people out there listening should know that a lot of our crises that we have and experiencing with our native wildlife and our native environment is brought on by politics.
Mm-hmm.
And favoritism amongst the elite so-called biologists, who there's a flock of them that come from the mainland, and they're welcome here, and they get to go out and eat granola and do all of that, and you see them coming here in hordes, but they exclude the native people.
Mm-hmm.
Genuinely, I mean, I don't mean on the cursory like they normally do. I'm talking about involving you.
Mm-hmm.
And this year coming, I am actually going to be going out and investigating and exposing many of these things, because there are a lot of native local people that are being excluded.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. People who have been on the land for generations, you know, who have been observing the, you know, all of the different species that have been mm-hmm. Living together for decades and years.
They come in and they basically stroke one another, scratch one another's back, and when you look at it, I would say I trust very little science here, because when it's said and done, generally it's hinging on politics. The results or the science or whatever is based on politics. Even if you got a scientist who was honest, in this system, it's still politics is going to be the main rule. But anyway, this is Carol Cox Show, 524-1080 if you have any questions for Summer. We're discussing, Summer Nemeth is discussing the Kiana Point proposed predatory fence, 524-1080. But again, I'm interested in this because when I see what is happening
mm-hmm.
And how they went about, whether it was fishing, any of these things. And they basically shoved it down the throat. They had these ideas, and you take... I did a show earlier this year exposing for the Environment Hawaii, Environmental Council, Conservation Council, where Laura Thielen was allowing them to introduce their political and their strategies on the state's website, but wouldn't allow me or a gentleman on the Big Island same access, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get that, I would say to the environmental community, you don't need to lend yourself to that, because if you're supposedly non-government, NGO,
mm-hmm.
you can't get so sweethearted in bed with them that when it comes to science, will they speak to you? No, because I've heard some of them say obviously foul things about you, saying you're just a native Hawaiian running around and trying to make trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the elitist, eccentric, you know, ethnocentric. If you don't go to the church mm-hmm. and approach your holy world or your spiritual world that way, then you're not valid.
Right.
And I maybe I could have said it a little bit better, but I hope the people get the gist of it.
I hope so, too, because for me, it's like, you know, look from the beginning, looking at the EA, I mean, the science is clearly is clearly corrupt,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I'm not a scientist, you know. I started off as a biology major, and I can read research, and I can look into things, and I'm going to ask questions. And when mm-hmm. they can't answer the questions, you know, and when they defend themselves continuously with facts that aren't even accurate,
no.
especially in the media. I mean, they've had some pretty big... the media here is just so frustrating. You know, the Star Advertiser put out an article, I think, you know, huge front page article, and it's pretty much a promo. It's like a promotional advertisement for this fence project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the science is flaky.
Did they ever ask you for a
no,
comment?
No, unfortunately
they
not.
Being the advertiser
no,
or the Star Advertiser.
No.
And I think, you know, sometimes people say, well, you rag on the media, but... If you're going to, we talk fair and balance in why you're describing it as a promo, because mm-hmm. here you're clearly on the front line speaking out against it, and I've read those articles, and I saw absolutely no genuine consideration of your or others
right.
who had objection.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is just that, a promo, and it's unfortunate. This is what, I'm very cautious, because I too, quote, I'm an environmentalist,
mm-hmm.
but I use that word loosely to describe just for the purpose of steering people into what I believe in.
Right.
But not, it doesn't describe me fully,
mm-hmm.
because being an environmentalist, meaning you can be corrupted, you can be emotional,
mm-hmm.
you can be as liberal as the world could ever become, and still blind to righteousness and fairness.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's... You can stand there with a pound of granola and look out over the Sierras and say you're going to save the world. But in fact, you haven't done anything to start with your inner spirit and being honest and respectful of Native people. You're just right. going to save the world.
Right. So. Native people who were the original environmentalists. I mean, the mm-hmm. environments wouldn't be here today if it weren't for Native people. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's something that a lot of modern environmentalists forget, you know, that a lot of Native communities were actually very in tune with the resource, you know, and they were very cautious as to managing it as well, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there were methods for indigenous management.
Well, let's put it this way. I don't know if the Native people were environmentalists,
mm-hmm.
but when the rest of the world arrived here, it was intact.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, you know, let action speak for itself,
mm-hmm.
and how whatever definition or label you want to place on it,
right.
the Native people existed. And I won't say in totality it was coexistence, because
mm-hmm.
the introduction.
It did have an impact on
Yeah, of course. When you move in, new species have an impact
mm-hmm.
on it. Let's not be so blind.
Right.
But the modern environmentalists from Harvard, Yale, and with the doctorates and what have you, they come and they acknowledge, oh, the Native people used to.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, now, there are Native people still here, and there's one Native people here saying, don't do this, and you're saying, never mind. We have an exemption to the EIS.
Mm-hmm.
We have money. We're going to protect this. And that's insensitive. And I have a stronger word for it, but because it's Sunday and I'm in a good
right.
mood, I don't want to really tell the world what now I've learned internally what environmentalism is.
Mm-hmm.
It is as worse as they complain about the right-wingers or the Republican parties and whatever. If people knew how the environmental community has harangued and orchestrated itself and gotten and woven its way into the halls of justice, into the halls of government management and environmental agencies,
mm-hmm.
they'd be shocked. Because it's all about, I'll write my PhD paper, I'll do this, I don't, you know, and then I'm going to be elevated amongst this community.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be, someone needs to say, well, let me stop here. We don't put a fence in because it wasn't put in over there, and the guys from New Zealand is going to be in town, and they got a deadline, they're going to be returning and bringing this material back, and getting them back is going to be a problem. No, either you had a need for that
yeah.
that was studied
mm-hmm.
and defined that you had a true need for it, and it's good science, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do now? And then where is it? Hopeful with OHA?
Well, I have hope. I mean, they're at this point, they're my only hope to stopping the construction at this point. You know, I the only thing that I can do personally now is is educate and get out to the, hopefully attempt to get some press on this, press coverage on it from the opposite side, you know, what's really happening, the backdoor dealings that have been going on, you know, violations by the people involved relating to their own memorandum of agreement.
What specifically are some of those? We have, what is our time here? You know, go ahead.
Okay, so one stipulation in the memorandum of agreement, which was signed between U.S. Fish and Wildlife and Laura Thielen signing for as a SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Officer, and then you had U.S. Fish and Wildlife and OHA all signing on to this agreement, and one stipulation was that that there be an archaeologist present during any ground-moving activity.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out there on the night that they rolled their bulldozer and their excavator in, and I saw them near the sand dune with the archaeologist, you know, far away, and they're scooping up this sand dune area with the excavator so that they can move the equipment in.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, I mean, you know, that's not really a good thing to be doing, especially in the dark, you know, and without the archaeologist right there saying, okay, it's okay for you to do that. But then that same weekend, they went in without the archaeologist present, and they were digging that culvert to divert the water from the fence area. This huge hole. You know, and it really concerns a lot of people in the Native Hawaiian community because, you know, because there've been burials documented out there, you can't just go digging around. And when you don't have an archaeologist present, you know, that's not a good thing to do. I mean, it's not good. It's not good to have not good to be doing that without a cultural monitor or somebody from the burial council at least, you know, there to observe what's happening. So they've done that. They've broken their memorandum of agreement, not having the archaeologists present when they're doing ground moving activity.
Well, I embrace this for many reasons, but one of the main reasons is that they rely and they quote Shifty on some of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the same Shifty, State Historic Preservation Board, that is under the gun now from the National
Park Service,
who said that their program is what?
It's completely
flawed and in jeopardy of funding, and that they failed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny how we allow this to happen.
Right.
You see. And we, that's what I meant earlier about being in bed with one another, the environmentalists, when they want something, oh, come on, and they'll incorporate it. But they will turn around and attack Shifty if it was something that didn't aid them in advancing their cause.
Right.
Whether schizophrenic or I don't know what would be the clinical term for it, but it doesn't speak well for one's integrity.
Absolutely.
Having selectively, you're being able to use these, but our Shifty should not be trusted in making any assessment, not based on my personal opinion, but based on what we've brought forth here with the on the National Park Service. You can see that on carolcox.com. I think it was back in June or April or somewhere in there. That's the problem. You know?
It's corruption at every level.
So anything you got in closing?
I guess this is my appeal to the public to, you know, to go out there and actually see what's going on and look at the impacts that this backdoor dealt project is going to have on this area. I mean, it's really unfortunate. I mean, go out and enjoy the views before it's gone. I mean, the fence is almost complete, so.
Yeah. Well, it's $250. I don't know the price because I saw it different at one
time.
Right,
it did seem to change a little bit.
But it is interesting that, again, and I hate to repeat myself and digress, but it's troubling when a project comes to town and the town wasn't ready for it, but the people that stand to make some profit from it says, well, let's put it here. And then everybody in the environmental community, to include some of the native people here who've been recruited and work for the government, applauded and said, yeah, put it there. Sama doesn't know what she's talking about. She doesn't speak for the native people. I think that's called divide and conquer.
Absolutely.
or push you aside, or
they're on the train going full speed ahead, and I'm the only, you know,
mind over matter.
Right.
You don't mind, and you don't matter.
Right. Absolutely.
So anyway, I'm going to ask someone to hold over here for the next hour, and we'll talk about other things. But again, thank you for joining me. This is a Carol Cox Show, and we'll be back in about 10 minutes.
Second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after CBS News.
This is KWAI Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial. AI Honolulu 1080 on the AM dial. CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Outrage and humiliation for airline passengers subjected to invasive security. Thomas Sawyer ended up soaked in urine.
victim of what he says was an overzealous pat-down by TSA.
They've got to stop what they're doing, and they've got to treat these people for different medical conditions.
He's a bladder cancer survivor. He must wear what's called a urostomy bag to collect his urine. The agent's rough treatment dislodging it. Head of the TSA, John Pistol, on CNN today, repeating that there will be no policy changes because the threat level is too real.
We're not changing the policies because of that, because of the risks that have been identified.
This upcoming week of Thanksgiving travel, there are planned passenger protests at airports to deliberately slow down the security process. 2014. By then, Afghanistan may be on its own.
I'm Tom Foti. Now that the U.S. and its Western allies have agreed to set a target date to transfer major combat operations to Afghan forces a little more than 4 years from now, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs says...
I'm very encouraged by what happened in Lisbon over the weekend.
Admiral Mike Mullen elaborating on CNN's State of the Union.
President Karzai and his leadership will have responsibility for his own country.
As for some of Karzai's recent concerns about Western military activity in Afghanistan, Secretary of State Clinton says...
He is very sensitive whether or not we are actually getting the bad guys.
She was on CBS's Face the Nation. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
Are they still alive? 29 men trapped when an explosion collapsed a New Zealand mine. Gases still keeping rescue workers from going in. So, from Sky News reporter Ian Woods on the scene.
A drill rig will bore a narrow hole from the surface to carry out further tests. It's close enough to the surface that if the men happen to be close by when the 6-inch hole is drilled, they should be able to hear them calling for help.
In southwestern China, still hope of finding 28 workers alive after a coal mine flooded there, trapping them. Pumps to remove the water on the way to the mine right now. China's mine's the deadliest in the world. More than 2,600 people killed in coal mine accidents last year alone. A crushing development for two American hikers still imprisoned in Iran.
The lawyer representing the two remaining hikers in prison in Iran says their trial is now set for February 6th, a delay that is likely to disappoint their families. Masoud Safi told CBS Radio that he will petition the court tomorrow for an earlier trial date because he said, quote, my clients must be free. Safi said he will also ask the court to visit Shane Bauer and Joshua Fatal, whom he has not seen for weeks. Tupac for CBS News, Dubai.
Well, he's even done outdone himself this time. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 1.
Let's get off the streets, get some safe.
Let's maybe get undercover before someone murders him.
That way they won't know which Harry Potter is the real one.
They are coming.
The most successful film of the franchise so far, what is said to be the next to last Harry Potter movie, taking in $125 million this weekend. This is CBS News.
I'm a pediatric nurse in a hospital, so I know firsthand how hard it can be to try and take a sick kid's temperature. They're tired and scared, they're squirmy and fussy. Getting an accurate read used to be a major undertaking, but not anymore. Now we use the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. Just one quick swipe across the forehead and you get an accurate temperature. More accurate than an ear, and as accurate as a rectal thermometer. And the best part, you can even use it while the kids are sleeping.
The Exergen Temporal Scanner. Changing the way the world takes temperature. Home model available at Walgreens and other fine retailers.
Did you know that 65% of U.S. homes are under-insulated? So don't miss Lowe's insulation event going on right now. Purchase qualifying in-stock Johns Manville formaldehyde free fiberglass insulation and get a Lowe's gift card worth up to $200 via mail-in rebate. Plus, insulation purchases before the end of the year qualify for a tax credit up to $1,500. So head over to Lowe's now or shop at Lowe's.com. Experience. Lowe's. Let's build something together. Offer valid now through December 13th. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Valid in U.S. only.
Go shopping. Get a job. It's all happening in the same place.
The pace is picking up at the shopping malls. This is a key week for holiday hiring just before Black Friday and the push to Christmas.
I think things are a little bit better than they have been the last few years. Certainly we're not back to the levels we were before the housing bust.
Neil Weinberg of Forbes says for job seekers, it's time to follow up on unanswered online applications.
You might also want to go to the retailer itself, and it may be that the manager who's actually on the floor needs someone to start tomorrow.
One survey says 40% of companies hiring now might keep workers after the holidays. Steve Cate and CBS News.
It's enough to brighten the eyes of skiers and snowboarders on the West Coast hoping for holiday fun. First wave of what is expected to be a powerful weekend storm dropping up to 2 feet of snow in the Sierra Nevada. Number of ski resorts opening for the season now. For drivers, chains are required, except for four-wheel drive vehicles over all three major Sierra passes around Lake Tahoe. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
Rates and availability of certain policy forms vary by state. Applications for insurance are subject to underwriting approval.
You keep pictures of your family on your desk, your wallet, even on your cell phone. Everyone knows how much you love your family. What they don't know is that you are living without life insurance. You're not alone. Most people think life insurance will take a lot of time and money. But eFinancial makes getting life insurance affordable and easy because a free quote is yours in just minutes when you call 1-800-508-6977. Depending on your situation, we can help a 40-year-old man in good health get $250,000 of term life insurance for less than $13 a month. At eFinancial, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you get the life insurance they need quickly and affordably. Get your free quote and protect the family you love. It only takes a few minutes, so call now. 1-800-508-6977. 1-800-508-6977. That's 1-800-508-6977.
Nobody, give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get them myself. I don't want nobody. Give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get them myself. I don't want nobody. Give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get them myself. Do you hear me? I don't want nobody. Give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. I don't give me innovation. Give me true communication. I don't give me sorrow. I want equal opportunity to live tomorrow. Give me schools and give me better books so I can read about myself and gain my true looks. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. Do you hear me now? Now I don't want nobody. Give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. Some of us try as hard as we can. We don't want no sympathy. We're just gonna be a man. I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. Do you hear me? Open up the door. I'll get it myself. We got talent we can use on outside of town. Let's get our heads together and beat it up from the ground. When some of us make money, we forget about our people.
Good morning again, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show, the second half, 524-1080. Just sitting here earlier talking with Salman Nimitz regarding the Kiana Point area and a fence that's being, a predator-proof fence, I guess, that's put out at Kiana Point. And we're going to be talking again. This is a project by the DLNR. It's on DLNR land. But in the second hour, I was going to be talking about things relating to DLNR for a bit. And a while back, we did several stories and wrote extensively in the Hawaii Fishing News about the DLNR's practice of hiring Mr. Mark Young. And or Captain Mark Young, if you recall briefly, Mr. Young was a captain in the United States Coast Guard here, and he got special favors from Laura Thielen, chairperson or chairlady of the Department of Land and Natural Resources. You know how things roll around here. It's you pass up all the good people and you bring in your friends, and that's what happened in this case. And there was an onslaught of activities against the fishermen, the boaters, just on and on and on. And Thielen wanted to implement this and basically militarize the DLNR. And she succeeded. And as you may recall, I appealed to our state legislators, Michelle Kadani, who did absolutely nothing and will be forever reminded of that coming near the next election. Miss Maisie Hirano, whom I sent a letter to, fully detailed, asking for her intervention to ask for an investigation. And what did she do? She sent the letter to the people whom I was complaining about within the United States Coast Guard, and she did nothing. So again, thank God I appreciate elephants in their memory, because I will be reminded that nothing happened. But what does that have to do with anything? Well, with this hiring of Mark Young, Captain Mark Young, if you recall, the position was held vacant. The head administrative position was held vacant at the DLNR by Laura Thielen, because she wanted to handpick this gentleman who was still serving active duty and, you know, under the state federal law, you can't work in a state agency and be active duty. So there was some issues there. And none of that became of concern to Ms. Hirano or the state legislators. And we raised, I begged all of them, Clayton, he and many of them, who did nothing. And now she left the position open, gave Mark Young the highest salary that could be afforded, then allowed him to serve in the military, but also working at the same time in state office. And so what goes on with that? Well, Mark Young came in June or somewhere like that. Don't quote me on the specific date, but it's in the Chronicle in our earlier shows. And you can get back issues of the Hawaii Fishing News where it was written in there. And I've just written a new article in the Fishing News that'll come out this issue. So, but what happened was that someone called me in the past month to tip me off that Mark Young, the handpicked special purpose person that Laura Thielen had picked for this job and held it open for a year and gave special treatment, special salary, because he was the man. Mark Young, reportedly the tip came to me that he had accepted a job with the Foreign Fisheries Agency in the Solomon Islands. And I inquired about that and immediately called Mark Young. And to this date, he didn't respond. He just said, told people internally that I had called and he wasn't responding to me. But Laura Thielen, I wrote a letter to her around November 5th. Asking Laura Thielen questions as to Mr. Young's departure. Well, I'm told later that Thielen, as much as care and kid glove treatment she gave him and pruning him for the job and holding it open, mind you, at the expense of the public's interest in the wildlife and the proper management of the law enforcement agency, she didn't know. And she wouldn't respond to my inquiry, to my email, to my calls, nor did Deborah Ward respond. Now, Deborah Ward promised, this is the public information officer for DLNR, stated she would be returning a call to me to let me know, answer my question, whether he had accepted a job or not. Well, she never did, but I since called her back, and because I had received a letter confirming, and I called she and the two of them, Thielen and Ward. Well, Ward says, well, this is a personnel matter, and typically we don't disclose this information. Well, this could have been stated to me the first week that I inquired, but you see how they play. Well, I called Thielen. And Thielen says, oh, I never received your email. But I sent her two emails, and it's confirmed she received them, spoke to the secretary, but she didn't acknowledge receipt, but also left recorded messages. So I understand the embarrassment. Here you told the world that you have this special person. You used the Attorney General, Mark Bennett, to also participate in the selection of this. You went beyond and used the biggest guns that you could use in circumventing the law and in employment practices, the legal employment practices in the state of Hawaii. And you chose this man with the assistance and the acknowledgement and the go-ahead from the Attorney General and all others, and the state senators and this amazing Hirano, the congresswoman, and all of those people. So it would be a bit embarrassing to learn that your hand-picked, perfect person, whom you chose to militarize the DLNR, as I raise those issues, was walking out on you, was wanting a divorce, and had accepted this job, and you had no idea. So I appreciate and understand the willingness to claim she didn't get anything. But now, I sent my letter on the 5th of November. Well, Thielen wrote on the 9th of November, while claiming she didn't get anything from me, but she wrote to the Docare people, Aloha Docare, yesterday morning, Mark Young has informed me that he is leaving Hawaii. Some unexpected personal matters have arisen that factored into his decision. I'm going to post this letter up, and she claimed that she didn't have any reason to respond to my inquiry. This is after claiming she didn't receive it. But I informed her that someone had leaked me a copy of her letter that she wrote to all Docare people, and her immediate response, well, if you have my response, then don't bother to ask me for it. I don't know, folks, but I thought that was a government agency and they were working for us. At minimum, they can be polite about it. She goes on, the four branch managers, Patty and I, conferred yesterday. We will be meeting as a group this week and next to develop a transition plan for Docare, and we'll provide you with further information once that is completed. Now, here's the troubling part. Personnel office will be preparing paperwork to seek approval to recruit and hire a new chief. This is the same personnel office that illegally left the position open and handpicked and circumvented and passed other candidates over. The recruitment of the new chief will be handled by the incoming administration. Well, that's some positive outlook. However, we want them to be able to hit the ground running. Wow, that sounds good. Hit the ground running. With what? Running to where? To carry out what it is that Laura Thielen wanted? We'll get the paperwork started so they can begin recruitment immediately upon taking office. I will notify them of the status in the transition materials I'm providing for the new chair and chief of staff. I've spoken with Castle Foundation. Now, listen to this. I have spoken with the Castle Foundation, UH School of Law Environmental Center, and the Nature Conservancy, who have been working with Mark and I on some grants and other support for Docare. While all three are disappointed at this change of events, they all reiterated their commitment to support Docare. They said that enforcement and Docare are essential for Hawaii's resources, that the division is more than any one person, and they will continue their support throughout the transition and beyond. Now, folks, all I can say to you is that how is it that she can go this route and handpick and pass over professional people that are better experienced, and I can hands down throw down the facts of the other candidates that know this issue inside out, and they were passed over. They were illegally passed over, and I'll use that term and go out on the limb and say it was illegal. But how can she now openly tell people that she's going to be preparing to recruit someone else? I don't think the Abercrombie administration should touch anything that she has anything to do with. And I think that what he should do, unlike Peter Carlisle, who came in and going to keep people, I think it is prudent and important that the new governor-elect Abercrombie come in with a a new broom, not an old broom with old dirt on it, with a new broom, and start sweeping and dusting that like no one has ever dusted before, because it is absolutely absurd. And she goes on, and Mark is preparing an exit list which provides the current status of all administrative activities and contact information. He will be leaving the office by end of this week. Now, that was on the 9th. She pretended not to know another thing. So where's a two-week notice? Well, I'll tell you what I was told that occurred internally. Upon receiving my inquiry, she had not been told. And I welcome her to take issue with this. If it's not true, then come in and give us the facts on it. But what I was told, sources close to the source there inside, was that she immediately paraded to him and said, "What is going on? I won't use the expletives." And in lieu of a two-week notice, he was already wearing his shorts and aloha shirt and slippers before she knew anything. This is what was described to me by sources, officers, and others internally within DLNR. And I will get you more information next week after the branch managers, Patty and I, have finished our transition plan. Transition plan? How can it be a transition plan when the man you handpicked just abruptly walked out on you? Fancy use of words. But again, let's go back to the Castle Foundation. What is troubling, early in the earlier show, you heard me speak about organizations becoming so closely wedded with the state agencies. Now, the Castle Foundation and its sister agencies have land here. If they're giving money and working closely with the state DLNR, who is a regulatory body that would regulate them if they were violating the law on environmental issues or what have you, would they be inclined to hold off because Castle is possibly going to give them money and working with them? How about the Nature Conservancy? So when we do these things, and it's come back to all of these issues now, fishermen being searched, the proposals of, that the law school would lend itself as part and parcel to this whole effort without vetting or without just standing back and being objective. I don't say that you shouldn't be consulted, but you're sitting here playing the game and not holding her feet to the fire. But it's more troubling than that, in that even the Nature Conservancy has programs in private lands and what have you, and they're involved in state issues. What if they wanted to, let's just say, as an example, broadcast poisons over the area to kill mice? That's just one now. Will the DLNR be able to stand up and scrutinize their permit and hold their feet to the fire on the being legal and in compliance with the state laws? I don't think so, because this is that clique that I told you about, the environmental community. And so I lay this out. You take Mark Young, who was, they were willing to hold the position open and even breached the posse comitatus issues, separation of church and state, having an active duty military man working in an active duty role in the state government. They ignore that and poo-pooed it, brushed it aside. But if you have that willingness to go to that extent, and then you come back and you partner up with the Nature Conservancy and you partner up with the law school, what were they doing? What was the law school for? Advising them, okay, if you're going to screw the people, let's screw them this way. This will, you know, if Summer Nimeth came to you, we could, here's the arguments you could offer for Summer, you know. I don't know, but knowing the character of Laura Thielen and what she has presented and how she has behaved, she has everybody that you could possibly think of as users of the environment and boaters and fishermen and all highly, highly aggravated at her and her decisions and her strong-arm tactics to push things through. So how is it that these entities, these three entities that have been named, get to be so cozy? People don't do things, and private businesses don't do things just to be doing them. They want something from you, Laura. The law school, I don't know what they're getting from it, but my God, I'm getting to feel nausea about it, that a university law school would be participating at any level in this kind of behavior. So this is why I said earlier, we, the public, need to give greater scrutiny to what is occurring with our state governments and our federal governments. When they want something, they get it. When they want to screw you, they screw you. And then they will bring in. I still cannot see how the Castle Foundation would have been involved at any level with the DLNR. If they want to give a grant, give a grant. Let people compete. I have no objection to that. But to be intimate in managing the resources and managing the administrator and picking the administrator, do you think Mark Young, working with the Castle Foundation in an intimate fashion, will say to them, we're going to indict you for grading, as they did on the Kauai, for the issues of grading the soils, and what if they had a dam on their property? Do you think that Mark Young and the Attorney General will go and prosecute these guys after they've been working intimately with DLNR, who have worked with him directly, and who have funded, or the talk is that they were going to give a large amount of money to fund the KLEA training of the police officers, or the bringing them up to standards. So, Laura Thielen, I'm told, I didn't get the email, but someone sent me some information to say that December 3rd is her last day. So we should be all happy, because what we have now is a tattered environment. Friends and organizations that should have never been involved this closely with the state government. That's why we have a state government. Now, we can take information from these people and willing to put input, write a letter, and give a minute of testimony. But to be so closely and picking the administrator and working with the administrator and working with the officers, see, goes further, because they're going to get their marching orders from the big dog, who would have been Mark Young, who gets his orders from Laura Thielen, who gets her orders from Linda Lingle, and who also gets their orders from some of the environmental groups who become bedmates with them. You know, there's this big threat about bed bugs. Well, here we got now the environmentalist our law school and become bedmates. And what have we lost? I mean, universities usually produce people that would stand back and wouldn't lend themselves to this. So Laura Thielen had a luxury that I don't think any other chairperson has ever had, to have a law school at her disposal to steer and guide her on what, while excluding people that are professional, excluding people that are capable of doing the job. There's a gentleman, Thomas Friel, who's the deputy chief there at NOAA, who competed for that position. And I will tell you, he's native Hawaiian, one of the finest people you've ever met in your life, knows the business, been around the business, could have taken this by the neck and walked it through, and we would have been well off. But instead, they passed him over. There were people internally, Wes Mundy, who has the capacity of doing this. But instead, what did Laura Thielen do? She resorted to this behavior and they're getting what they want. They're putting their fence up, want to protect the birds, while beating up, maiming, the number of complaints that came from the fishermen and running the people out, but the four-wheel drive group were still allowed to go out there. So anyway, Summer, I was talking. What do you have on this? You mentioned a couple things. You want to join in?
Sure. Well, actually, we had finally got Mark Young to come out to Ka'ana, because you know, one of the major issues out there, one of the major concerns that we have is the off-roading situation. I mean, people are just destroying the land out there and causing runoff. And, you know, you see mud flows during the rain seasons into the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. And so we kind of called Docare out on it and said, hey, you're harassing the fishermen out there for having camping paraphernalia and tents. But what is that impact compared to the people that are out there during the day just tearing everything up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we finally got Mark Young out there to observe the behaviors and see what was actually happening. And, you know, we were just so glad that he actually came out, because he had seen right there that, you know, this is the real impact. This is the concern that Docare should be having, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be enforcing this off-roading situation instead of, you know, going in at night and harassing fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was his, he had left us at that. And then come to find out, you know, he's going bye-bye, which is really unfortunate, because the resource is still, you know, the off-roaders are still out there in full force.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, for 5 months he was in office there, but he was working intermittently, I should describe it,
mm-hmm.
before the 5 months becoming. So the questions that I raised, was he being paid full salary?
Mm.
No one wanted to answer that. And these are the kinds of questions that I was hoping Miss Maisie Hirono would have asked. Miss
mm-hmm.
Michelle Kadani, state senator, would have asked. But instead, they sent the letter and then tell me, oh, well, we asked the questions and they said no. I was asking for a hearing, a Senate hearing, because mm-hmm. they would have fleshed out quite a bit.
Right.
And shamefully now, we waited a year, left the position vacant. And you need good management, you know, if you're going to approve and have them all certified. That brings them a bigger question. If Mark Young's expertise was to bring in and bring the officers, I'm going to describe it as certified,
mm-hmm.
then why do we have officers running around?
It's a great question.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Why? You know, so it's what is not said is a bigger concern. Okay, now she's willing to say, and she's going to make a transition. How can you make a transition when everything has jagged edges?
Mm-hmm.
How can you?
You really can't.
Yeah, I mean, when it's broken, the system is broken. What transition is she talking about?
Yeah, I don't understand. I hope that when Abercrombie comes in, he's able to smooth those edges, because really right now our resources are just in under extreme threat.
Well, yeah, and once again, this say why it is important that even Mr. Abercrombie must be vigilant and dutiful in his approach to assigning someone.
Right.
Because in Italy, the DLNR has historically been a cesspool of politics,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so this is, once again, you say a new day, a new change.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Are they going to put in an environmentalist who from the Nature Conservancy? Are they going to put in someone from the law school? Are they going to put in someone from Castle Foundation?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, the Levaya Action Network actually went to meet with Abercrombie before his election.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked him what he was going to be doing about the DLNR Docare situation. And he's, and, you know, we said that, you know, you need to do a complete overhaul
mm-hmm.
on that whole division. I mean, everything in there is just
mm-hmm.
is a complete mess. And he agreed. He said that, you know, the most complaints he's ever received from the state so far have been related to DLNR and Docare.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was his intention before election that was going to be his number one focus, was that he
mm-hmm.
was going to completely put order to, you know,
mm-hmm.
to that department. Unfortunately, he did mention that he would be looking to replace Laura Thielen. This is something that he had told us,
mm-hmm.
With somebody internally. And so I'm really concerned, because when you're looking to replace somebody internally and the system itself is not working,
mm-hmm.
you know, where is that going to put us in the next few years? So,
well, it'll probably, as I say, that people must understand the DLNR is a very critical. I mean, it is the... I think it's bigger than DBIT, because they manage their ceded lands as
mm-hmm.
the historical, they have the fisheries, they have forests,
mm-hmm.
they have, you name it. And if he's not smart about it, you know, one can claim anything, And he, you know, he said that, yeah, I'm going to get in and I'm going to work this and change the deal in R.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't hear any specifics. So we'll sit and watch, and then there's Brian Schatz. So my concern is that we don't go in and recruit someone internally, because I'm going to tell you, there is not a single program that the public can call and ask a specific question and get an immediate answer. It's always going to be, if you want to know the fishing, the numbers of fish caught and reported annually, you have about a 3-year wait.
Mm-hmm.
So what are they managing? 3 years of inaccurate records? That's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
You can't find a biologist that works among them that is willing to go out and say emphatically, specifically, yes or no. It's always, I'll have to go to the consultant who did the study.
Mm.
So why do we need this agency?
Yeah.
So that, if in fact, I don't know, it's difficult to become so excited and the public going, well, what, why all the noise about this? Because it is critical. The native species suffer.
Mm-hmm.
Cultures issues suffer. I mean, Laura Thielen and getting that letter from, and now mind you, there were other people before Laura Thielen that should be handed some of the responsibility on the failure of its management and SHPD and what have
Absolutely,
you.
Absolutely, yes.
But she had a big firing escapade and got rid of good people and brought in friends of friends, and mm-hmm. like poor IU, who I don't know what her background is, but I'd never heard of her, and I dealt with SHPD a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then even her responses were mealy-mouthed, always. So this, if he's going to clean up, he needs to stand back. You know, and I've heard that Senator Clayton, he was interested.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, it's going to take an effort on everybody's part.
Absolutely.
And do we name someone from the transition? Do we name someone from the Castle Foundation to head it? Do we name someone who worked for the Nature Conservancy to head it? Who do we pick?
It's a great question. I would hope somebody who would be willing to hear the public concern
mm-hmm.
over the NGO concern.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we, you know, it works a funny way, because NGOs, they know how to tickle the underbelly of the state government.
Mm-hmm.
See, they realize it's politics, and so they'll go, or we'll go to Senator Inouye and ask him for money for the alien species.
Mm-hmm.
So Senator Inouye says, oh, great, I'll do that. And then he's happy, because they're going to be willing to hire Senator Inouye's friends or divert or bring in someone that if they manufacture, I'm just using some off the wall, but if they
right.
manufacture traps, oh, well, we need traps to trap the mongoose, so let's go over there and hire Carol Cox's company because he's a friend of the senator.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. And so you, as a native person, and others, if you're not in the click, you hear the clicking of the dial, they mm-hmm. tune you out.
Right. The door is closed.
Yeah, immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Because you pose a threat. But they'll cite you and your ancestors, oh, how well you took care of them. But they don't invest a thought in saying that you may have the same and the upbringings and the same values that your ancestors had.
Mm-hmm.
You're an activist. You're whatever. They put you off as that and dismiss you.
Right.
But look at the great lengths that they go to. The hire Mark Young, if he know about as much as about wildlife management, you don't have much wildlife in the Coast Guard. You manage people.
Right.
You may have said in a class, but what is hands-on? Has he ever written a ticket? Nope. Has he ever gone out and identified a fish? Nope. But he was the perfect man. So it brings on a lot of questions. But, you know, backing up, talking about politics and favoritism. Now, I don't know, speaking to you, why would William Isler have to fly to New Zealand to look at the one and only fence that, as an example, to go, that's going to be built at Kaina Point?
No, that's a question that I had too. I mean, everyone else just got to look at the pictures in the environmental assessment. So I thought it was really interesting that they actually flew him over to take a look at how the fence works.
What did they do? They needed him there to, and what they do. I mean, this is going to be a little specious or facetious about it, but what they do? They brought in a truckload of rats and said, "Okay, Isla, you sit right here, and we want to show you firsthand. We're going to let away loose.
See how they can't penetrate the barrier."
Why did he need to go to New Zealand?
That's a, you know what? I think that's an excellent question, Carol.
And he's on the committee. What was that
he's
committee?
He's on the kind of point advisory group.
So he went to New Zealand. They paid his expense
mm-hmm.
to go there to sit and see how the rats could not run through the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Did he write up a report back to say, well, I watched and only 10 rats penetrated the fence?
You know, I've never seen the report, but he did come back, you know, promoting that particular fence.
See, when we lend ourselves to this kind of behavior, I'm sorry, I mean, and I admire William there. But
I do, too.
It encourages the Mark Youngs. It encourages the Nature Conservancy. It encourages the Laura Thielens to rob the people.
Mm-hmm.
of what is rightfully theirs without, and I mean rightfully, of fair participation.
Right.
You see, to take and send you to New Zealand, that's like some of the city councilmen went to Oregon and Washington to watch how they dump trash into a hole on the native people's land without ever conferring with the native people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, what is this?
It smells funny to me, Carol.
Yeah, it's I smell a rat somewhere. But mm-hmm. but again, I'm saying these things because I believe nobody in this town is willing to say them. No one is willing to ask the most obvious questions. Why is it that every program meets the same treatment? Gets mm-hmm. No matter what the environmental program is or whatever it is, it's something. They found that it works.
Right.
I'm at a loss to know why one would need to go to New Zealand and look at a fence. I mean, how do you make...
How can you make determinations based on that?
Could you have done it just by video to show here's a geographical area? Because you're not, unless he's going to spend months and weeks to sit there and monitor it, why couldn't you just take what it was that they've presented?
Mm-hmm.
You don't trust them? You need to see firsthand that rats dumped along the way for the whatever length of the fence that they couldn't penetrate it? I don't know.
Yeah. I'm really glad that you raised that question today because it's something that I think a lot of people don't realize. I mean, clear examples of how, I hate to say this, but people are bought into decisions.
Well, when you're part of the system, you have to strap on your guns and say, okay, today I'm wearing this hat.
Mm-hmm.
When I stray from that, am I lending myself to suggest that I approve, so therefore it is good? You know, and that's not to speak about, I say that about anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And all of you that want to call me up and see me, let me know. But I'm saying to you that when we have programs in the VIA network,
uh-huh.
can get no, they dismiss you and others. Your father also works out there.
Yeah, we're out there all the time.
And this is not a game. You're not trying to serve as an obstructionist,
no,
are you?
No, absolutely not. We are there, number one, to protect that place.
Yeah.
And we've been doing it, you know, since we both were young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that we're doing with no money involved. We
mm-hmm.
don't need money. It's
mm-hmm.
all about preserving and protecting that place.
Mm-hmm. And do you object to the fishermen going there fishing?
You know what? If they can fish responsibly, I have no problem. I come from a fishing family. Our family
mm-hmm.
fishes out there, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so when you see these other things happen, what do you think now? You see Mark Young is leaving. He's because he's Coast Guard, he's abandoning ship.
Mm-hmm.
But usually the captain stays with the ship. That's been the old
right.
myth.
That kind of makes me think that there's something wrong with that ship. Maybe maybe there's some, you know, cronyism happening,
yeah.
and that's what I've seen in our experience with DoCare and the
mm-hmm.
harassment that's happened. You know, we've reported to them on several occasions, same officers doing the same type of harassment to hunters and fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
They're still working the job. you know, despite public complaints. So
yeah, I have one admonishment for the general public out there, and that is, when we initially broke this Mark Young story, the boaters said, oh, it's an issue with the fishermen. And then some of the native people says, oh, no, it's an issue with some of the people that want to fish out there and throw nets. And then I'm saying, no, no, no. This is an institution that is attacking you as a community, as we're made up, native people, non-native people, fishermen, boaters. And so it started with the parking at Ala Moana or at the Ala Wai.
Right.
It started with then the boat people, and then you got Kihi Lagoon, and then you have Ke Papa Island, and then you get... and so now the fishermen are going, oh, my God, well, we warned you. The boaters are, oh, my God, they're Ed Underwood, who's shown him his horns. So my admonishment to... when you see an institution behaving in such a fashion where it's unfairly impacting any entity in the community, you'd better join forces, because what's good for the goose be good for the gander, the way they see it. If they can succeed, they have an overall management. They want to contain, they want to militarize this, they want licenses, they want to inspect. They were presenting, there was a nonprofit organization, Linda Paul was involved, attempted to introduce a bill that would allow any public person with an ice chest to be searched. You could be driving on the highway, you got an ice chest. You could be driving on the highway, you got a boat. They could pull you over, stop you, search you, go into everything. That was a rule that they were attempting to implement. We beat that back. So I think that what I would say to the listeners out there, the next time, whomever it is, when you see one portion of a community targeted and being unfairly, or if you hear them, pay attention, because they are the canary in the cave, so to speak, because the system is attempting to manage, and that's its management strategy. So, and the other thing is, I would say, wherever Laura Thielen goes, we should forever be aware of where she's going, and when she, if she's nominated for something, go in and testify against her, or at least present what it is that remind her of her behavior, and remind the people that would be approving her of her behavior, and the arrogance that she displayed. I think she, because she's connected, I think her spouse works at the U.S. Attorney's office. So, you know, nothing, and then she had the Attorney General, State Attorney General Bennett, on the selection team for a measly deal in our head. So, again, I don't know where this is going to go, but I'm going to try and tell it the best way I can, and it may not be as sophisticated, but the facts are going to be there, and how it comes out, you know. And if, again, we're going to post this and other information on the website at carolcox.com, CARROLLCOX.com. But any other things that you want to share with us?
I think that's about it, Carol. I can only hope that that the public continues to raise questions when projects like the fence, the predator fence, come up. I mean, you know, and we need to continue to make, at least make an effort to participate in government decisions, because we are the public, and the government is supposed to work for us, and the government is supposed to be protecting the resources. So we need to keep them in check if they're not doing that. You know, it's our kuleana.
What do you have to say to the NGOs out there? Do you think that, are you trusting
them? I'd like to recommend that they read Mark Dowie's Conservation Refugees and start looking back at the history of the problems with NGOs going in and, you know, taking Native people out of their environment and creating the you know, the national park situation. It's not, it doesn't always work out for the best. You need to consider indigenous science too. Native people are scientists. They've been observing for generations. You know, you need to take their mana'o into account too.
I can't help but harken back on my past firsthand experience. And I'll share a story without going into full detail. I was assigned to the Pacific, and I went to a country in the Pacific here, south. And the assignment was to find out and document who it was that was importing turtle shells and shipping them to Japan, because then George Herbert Bush was going to file a petition against Japan under the Pelley Amendment. And the assignment was to find out who it was that and how these shells were going to Japan to make eyeglasses and what have you, frames. I found that it was the president and some of his undermen for that country, that Pacific nation. And they were also taking the dugong, which is a rare marine mammal.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the bones of the dugong, selling them for necklaces in Ben Franklin in this country.
Hmm.
And the Interior Affairs guy was upset. But also, Nature Conservancy was there working in that area and was attempting to get a designated area for a reserve or refuge and to acquire land. Let's leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
And in turn, when I made my discovery, the Nature Conservancy was able to intervene and influence the United States Fish and Wildlife Service heads to back off. Well, quite naturally, it was an embarrassment. It would have proved to be embarrassing for the George Bush if he had gone through, followed through with the Pelley Amendment complaint, because that would have meant it was coming from one of our flag nations.
Yeah.
So this is the power that the non-government agencies, the NGOs of the Nature Conservancy, there was an article written about that entire subject, Al Gore and a saltwater crocodile, in the Animal People. It was chronicled way back. But that's a story, and it's factual. And so this is why I worry about these relationships. And I don't believe that the native people really understand the consequences and how they're being systematically and methodically iced out.
Mm-hmm.
Because these NGOs or influence, they're not sensitive.
Absolutely not.
In totality to the native people and the native environment. They're also looking where there's federal monies, they got to feed their system.
Mm-hmm.
And if the money is available, you know, and they become consultants for the Fish and Wildlife Service, and they partner up. Palmyra, again, a first-hand experience. The owner that had the island wanted to sell it to the Fish and Wildlife Service for a very small amount, millions. Fish and Wildlife Service people that were headed in bed with the and cozy with the non-profit organization. Nonprofit went in and bought the land, or came up with a deal where they get to keep a portion of the land, and Fish and Wildlife Service paid for the land when they could have paid for it originally and owned the entire island.
Mm.
So the public is not aware of that, and they'll never become aware. And when you get a Laura Thielen who's willing to embrace and embed, everybody benefits. When I say everybody, Thielen, the NGOs, and they're looking, they're power players. They want to, quote, manage the environment. But what are they doing to the native people in the process?
Right.
Quite naturally, you wouldn't be involved in that and been included, because you may have some objections. You may have some cultural concerns, or you may find that it's going to impact a certain family or a number of constituents who use that land historically. So by involving you,
makes everything a lot more difficult.
And so it's contrived, and I will take issue with anyone publicly. If you have a different opinion, then I'll bring out my paperwork and show you that when the federal government, Fish and Wildlife Service, and the DLNR get in bed with nonprofits so intimately that you can't discern one from the other, and they prop one another up, and it's obviously the soundest legal advice along the way, because you got not only the Attorney General's office advising you, not only do you have the U.S. Attorney's office advising you, you also have the UH Law School, of Environmental Law School. And that's sound environmental management? So, you know, and that's not all NGOs are that way, but
right.
But again, this is a big blight on the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where we need to pick up and understand when we go and embrace some of the nonprofits. Know what you're getting into, knowing where they come from, knowing what they stand for. Are they coming here to be permanent, or are they coming here to get involved and write a paper, do a thesis, and leave?
And get paid.
Right. Yeah, because they don't want to lose their job. This is paradise. I mean, how many people would love to come here and study the birds and be able to go to Big Island and eat granola and then go back to the mainland and get a job with whomever?
Right.
You see, so these are problems that we must be forever concerned with. And again, thank you for joining me. We're going to close. Any other comment you have?
I think that's it, Carol. Thank you again for having me.
Okay,
here.
Anytime you want to come by and talk. This is, you know, if we offend anybody out there, you're welcome to come in and take issue, and I'll give you the mic and let you talk until you can't talk anymore. But again, these are things that never go talked about. And,
right.
You know, and so what happens? You know, you get 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
You get a comment period, and then you get to come in and testify. 1 minute. Like
a
sheep being led to slaughter, as
right.
I've said. And that's unfair. So anyway, thank you for joining me, and we're going to sign off. And again, carolcox.com. See you next week. Aloha.
for listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.